energy sources we like, renewable. Some sweets are hard and others are chewable. Bank accounts, well, interests accruable. We believe that everything's renewable.
You always hate your own handwriting, don't you?
Because I handwrite so little now and I'm typing more, my handwriting, it's so lazy, like on a long, like temperamental, I just went like, oh, so the middle bit. You know, I know what the word is, and I got lazy and didn't do all the letters.
Because my older brother went to France for a semester of college, went to Grenoble, dans le sud de la France.
Oh,
and his handwriting is so bad, and this is, you know, before emails were a thing. So he'd send letters home, and because his handwriting was so bad, I was the only one who could read his handwriting. So I would read the letter aloud while the family gathered, right? Like, you know.
Ah, like the olden days when you were the only literate one.
Exactly. Yeah. I was the only one who had schooling, so I used to read the letters.
I thought you were going to say you had to ring him up and go, here, what did you say in the letter? And then he'd just have to read it out to you over the phone, which totally defeats the purpose of sending letters in the first place.
He's got very weird handwriting.
This is Reviewables, the comedy podcast, where we put the world to rights one review at a time. Mm. Today, we're reviewing handwriting.
I don't like that. I can't read that at all. That's illegible. One star.
Thanks, Edwin. And today, my name's Keane McGarrigle, and today, the special guest... Oh, and Edwin Salmon.
Hello.
Sorry, I forgot about you there for a second.
Hello.
Today, our special guest is Temperamental Miscellaneous.
You, hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
You were the first musician we've had on the show.
Is that right?
Yeah
it is, actually. Super.
Mostly it's just fucking comedians.
Yeah, we're casting our net wider.
Oh, yeah, so, that's great. I'm delighted. I'm honoured. Thank you.
Yeah.
No. Because I was at the... We did that gig together, that...
That's right, yeah.
That feminist gig where I was the only male feminist there performing, yeah. I think.
What gig was this?
Mostly. It was in...
Film Base.
Because
I... the look of it was over. In... Film Base, okay.
Yeah, and it was good crack. You were very good.
I'm trying to remember. It was hashtag something. Do you remember the name of
Waking
it?
Waking the Feminists.
Waking the Feminists. Yeah. The Feminists Are Awake, actually, to play on Waking the Feminists, is
feminists,
it?
The Feminists Are Awake,
the Feminists Are Awake, the spin-off.
Narcoleptic feminists who are constantly falling asleep.
Waking the...
need comedy and... spoken word, I don't know.
Spoken word and there was...
That's kind of how I describe your oeuvre.
Sometimes I do that. I brought my bow on today. Sometimes I just use the spoken word, my own original lyric that I've written. I even hark back as far to 9 years old when I wrote my first poem in the primary school I was in, you know, when I was nine. That's when I wrote my first poem. So I was up in a school there only recently, and Trinity Comprehensive in Ballymun, and I use that. It's like part of my little curriculum that I've built to incorporate when I'm teaching in schools and youth clubs and so on. And sometimes I use a little leaf, and I'll recite it in a minute, but sometimes I use that to kind of, you know, the way we used it in English class, compare and contrast two pieces of work, Yeats and so on, and you'd find differences and things that correspond in terms of the content and so on. Well, I kind of do that with Little Leaf, and then 20 years later, something I've written recently, you know.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting, some of the feedback I get, you know.
So you have poems that you've written when you were nine, because I used to write songs when I was about 11, but the songs were... I don't still have them. I wrote them in my, you know, my copybooks, but they were all... This is before I even started playing, because I do play guitar and whatnot. I'm amazing on the whatnot. Especially the 12-string whatnot.
12-string electric whatnot.
Forget about it, man.
So expensive to buy, though. I don't know how you afford one.
I got a pickup for my whatnot. But anyway, it's a cheaper option. But all my lyrics were... like ZZZ, 1, 2, 3, yeah, baby, you and me. You
know? Wow.
It was like that kind of
great stuff. Syntax. Yeah.
Right about love and loss as a 10 or 11 year old.
You know
really?
A lot about it when you're 11. ZZZ.
I know, in fairness, when I was, say, 17, when I recorded my first songs to demo tapes, which I still have.
They're probably not as good as the ones you wrote when you were 10.
Or only slightly better, I was going to say.
Oh, okay.
But probably the
I just
truth
imagined
is not as
that,
good.
You know, because you had life experience then, you really thought you knew it all, and it just went, quality went down.
Crazy. I had lyrics like, I was hoping that you'd be here when I got back home. It's just my Technicolor world has gone monochrome.
Oh my god.
The song was called Monochrome.
Was it called Monochrome World?
Monochrome. And I had a sample from Orson Welles' War of the Worlds in it as well. Oh, God.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Oh, super. That's
a great version of that does exist on SoundCloud, but I won't tell you who by. It's a pseudonym. Anyway, enough about me.
I want to hear
about
our guest.
This is all going to get edited out anyway.
No, it's definitely not. I'm fascinated by Monochrome World, the original recording by Edwin Salmon.
Definitely.
We've 100%. Gone down an unexpected path.
We really
today.
Have today.
Well, but before my pseudonym was born, Temperamental, when I was 14, I was just Elaine Harrington, age 9. Little Leaf by Elaine Harrington, age 9. And I really got my first kind of props when I was 9 years old. You know, I got my first lot of respect for something I created and publication, yeah. Essentially, you know, because the teacher put it on the front, the back, the front of room 7 in St. Canice's Girls National School in Finglas.
That was where you could aspire to, the front of the, on the door.
Yeah, on the door so that everybody could see it when they were walking around the school, you know, going up to their class or whatever, you know. So that felt good. It was, you know, getting your work out there in a way, you know, obviously in a very kind of but novice way.
But it's the audience. It's
positive,
you know, it's the biggest audience you can probably hope for at 9. It's like everyone who walks past the classroom. Mm. Also, that's the thing as well. When you're that age, why do we always do that? You always put your age after your thing. You know, here is a poem by Keith McGarrigle, age 8. And you always put your age in. Why? Like everyone in the class knows what age you are, but you age 8. Just, I don't know what that is. It's like just before you say anything bad about it, Age eight. There you go.
Yes, you can look back on it maybe. But yeah, no, it's been good for me because, you know, it helps me to gauge the period, different phases in my life, you know what I'm saying? Because things then really change. You were saying that about, Edwin was saying about writing when he was 11. Things really changed for me then when I hit 11. So it's a whole world between kind of 7, 8. I was telling Edwin, I've been vegan since I'm 11. I went vegetarian when I was 7 or 8. And I really became this abolitionist kind of little activist when I was this age, you know? So I started like boycotting Coca-Cola, McDonald's. McDonald's, you know, taking leaflets
at
and
9.
Stuff. At 9? Well, it was 7 or 8. I went vegetarian. Yeah, very.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way before it was cool and trendy.
That's right. I think it's a bit of a thing now, isn't it? Veganism. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but
People are doing it for, like, my brother. He's not a vegan, but he went vegetarian for environmental reasons.
Oh, yeah. People are doing that. Yeah.
And it's something I try and do is where I'll have, if I can have at least one day a week where I don't eat meat, because I do enjoy eating meat.
I do eat meat, but I'm the same. We in our house, we have vegetarian days. It's kind of by choice.
In our house, we have vegetarian days.
Yeah, that's it.
We
regularly have lots of vegetarian meals in our house.
Yeah.
As a kind of, we didn't sit down and go, this is what we have to do. But we did kind of lean towards, well, it's better for us to not eat meat all the time. Because you're not designed to eat meat all the time. And
there's really no difference when it comes to taste. Like when people say, oh, vegetarian food is horrible, I think, well, you're just not a good cook. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because a friend of mine said about with regard to eating sausages, people say, you're vegan and you're eating things that are the shape of a sausage. And she says, well, I'd eat it if it was the shape of a triangle. It's just a substitute meat, you know?
Yeah, so. This whole thing of substitute meat, it's like, I don't want to eat meat, but I want to eat something that tastes like a sausage and looks like a sausage, but isn't a sausage, you know, like corn or whatever.
Mm.
That's what I used to think vegetarian food was. But then I went over to a friend of mine in college who'd been a vegetarian all her life. Mm-hmm. And the food that she was serving us was so delicious. It was
just
nicer.
For the listener at home, Edwin is doing the delicious fingers thing.
So delicious.
That's delicious.
Tremendous. Delicious. So do you remember that poem that you wrote when you were 9? Good. So moving on. So you're 14 when you...
Yeah, when I turned 14, then I had this forced psyche change and I called myself Temperamental. So I started kind of thinking about a title to give myself. I started thinking about these changes that were happening and developing, becoming my own person. And I just in hindsight, looking back at, you know, how it's not temperamental, it's real kind of a rap thing, a play on words, temper hyphen mental.
Yeah.
So in hindsight, I really feel that, you know, the whole temper and mental, the separation being like the hyphen, if you look at it on the page, the way it looks, this name, to divide temper and mental suggests some sort of division between the head and the heart, which was absolutely pertinent to maybe how I was as that little, you know, reflective 14-year-old, and even harking back to, as I said, like being 9, 10, 11 and growing up, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But you sound like you were already very much your own person when you were like 8 or 9.
I was, yeah. I went recently to St. Michael's in Finglas. I was a first year student there. I was doing a workshop and one of the teachers there kind of turned around and says, I was your prefect in first year. Now, I moved to Mount Temple at the end of first year. I left this Holy Faith uniformed all-girls school to go to Mount Temple, which is multi-denominational, no uniform mix and so on. But anyway, this teacher says, oh, Elaine Harrington, yeah, I was your prefect in first year here, and we used to be amazed because, you know, you used to talk to us like an adult. We'd have full-blown conversations with you, you know. Yeah. So I recall that, you know, and yeah, I was always kind of like hyper aware of things and cerebral, all cerebral.
I'm just trying to think of what I was like when I was 14. I was not in no way developed like my own. I was a grumpy little bollocks, but I wasn't, I wouldn't have been as self-assured as you sound like you were. You know, that kind of like, I know what I want and I know what this is, what I'm doing
I'm
here.
I'm still not like that.
No, you're not, obviously, Edwin, but that's your problem. We're going to sort out your racism first and then we'll deal with everything else.
I was incredibly introverted all the way up to, the only thing that brought me out of my shell was when I was 16 and we did musicals in school, and we did the Pirates of Penzance, and I was cast as the Major General.
I don't know what that is. The Pirates of Penzance.
The Pirates of Penzance. I am the very model of a modern Major General of information, animal, vegetable and mineral.
I've heard that bit.
I'd sing that whole song. And there's like one scene where I'm surrounded by like 30 16-year-old girls wearing night dresses. Now, I was 16 as well. We're all the same age.
Yeah, no, I wasn't going to go down that line at all. I wasn't going to imply you were creepy.
So I was like, sorry, guys, I got to go to rehearsals. I can't go to double mats. I have to rehearse for the play.
With all the girls.
With all the girls.
Yeah, okay.
So I kind of came out of my shell doing that. But up to 16, I was like, yeah. So you're 14... You're temperamental, miscellaneous.
Temperamental, and then
we
I was 19.
We should point out, just because you're saying you're not 14 now.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because the way you said that, for people who don't know you, and you're like, you're 14, they're having 14-year-olds on now.
Well, when people see the picture, they might get confused as well. So,
yep.
Cause you're wearing a uniform.
That's true.
I am wearing it. It's every Monday I wear a uniform.
Yeah.
School. Well, not school, but college. It's a thing. You know, I'm playing with roles and that, and different attire and how it impacts how you interact with other people, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
Is it interesting walking around dressed as a schoolgirl? Is it?
Yeah, because it's quite authentic. It's not kind of...
It looks like
a
uniform.
It's not Lolita-esque or suggestive way, you know? It's
You're not a 25-year-old going on to a school-themed disco.
Yeah.
With a bunch of friends. And
no one moves out of your way.
It's not
no
a,
one.
If you're in a school uniform.
Yeah. I just noticed that, you know. Yeah. Well, the two times I've done it, I've noticed I'm social. Like, I walk on the street quite a bit, you know.
Yeah.
And as we referred to earlier, I kind of feel like having been homeless for a few spells during my life, I have this kind of knowingness of the street and the way it operates. And I would agree with some of the stuff that's on our, you know, project assignments and so on and so forth. We're looking at the idea of the street as this living thing, right? Or the city as this living thing, right? And how you interact with it and how you create this energy or this activity in the street, how you activate the street, you know? So I feel like when I'm being Elaine, or I'm being temperamental miscellaneous, or I'm being this person, this kind of maybe... maybe a number or whatever in this bracket, a student going to second level school or whatever, then it's absolutely it's apparent that people are treating you a little bit differently, you know.
That's funny. So that nobody gets out of I'm just trying to think, do people get out of my way when I'm walking down the street?
They usually get out of my way, is what I'm saying. Like they generally, like, not that people get out of my way. Like, I'll go out of my way to maneuver, but I noticed today in particular, all the way from Thomas Street to here, to Pierce Street, I noticed that there was very little, like, effort on the other person's part to manoeuvre and kind of make way for me. I more have to be the instigator of that courtesy, you know?
So it's kind of like, oh, students. get out of
a little bit, or young, like, woman, or uniform, and you become this number, this nothing.
You are not a fully formed human being, whereas I am.
And I have to say, sometimes
you must bow to my wishes.
Well, I know, and this is probably partly why people think, and I'm probably guilty of it as well. If I see like a group of students in uniform in front of me, I always think, oh, they're going to get in my way.
Yeah, straight away.
They're going to be standing around, they're going to get in my way, and you have to go around them, and you go, go around them. So I wonder, is that it? They automatically see the uniform and go, oh, someone in my way.
Yeah.
She can get out of my way this time.
This negotiation is what I'm talking about, being on the street and negotiating, and I'm a great believer in that. I mean, I've opened so many doors for men, this experiment, you know, you open the door for a man and he'll put his hand over with that height privilege. He'll put his hand up, hold it at the door and allow you to walk under his oxter, under his arm. He'll let you that, you know.
Nice of him.
I said, you're wasting both of our times. Can you just go?
I'm opening the door for you.
We're not playing wall tig. I'm opening a door for you. Yeah. What I hate when people, when you open a door for someone and they don't say thanks.
Oh, yeah.
Even when they look straight at you and then walk out the door. And I always sometimes sort of passive aggressively say, you're welcome. kind of quietly under my breath, you know.
What I find,
it's a dick move,
this happens to me at work. There's there's these swing doors in the corridor I'll be going up and down at work. And there's two of them. You don't need to hold one open because someone can go at the other one.
Yeah.
But it really annoys me. If you're a bit away from it, but someone sees you and they're going through and they stop and they hold it, you could have just let it go, because by the time it'll have settled back, by the time I get there, and now I have to hurry up.
Aww.
Just to, so you won't feel, and it's just this awkward thing. You're like, oh, thanks. It's like stop doing that. If someone's not near the door, don't hold it for them. They're being nice. Yeah. They're being polite, but still.
Stop being polite, you narcissist.
Oh, I know.
As my sister pointed out, somebody wrote in a Facebook comment there the other day, I forget who it was for. It was something to do with the not Haven House, they occupied this
Apollo
place.
House.
Exactly. Yeah. Stop being generous, you narcissistic, you know. Well, courtesy of Marie Harrington.
Sometimes people are, there's the thing of like, I gotta donate to this charity. Where's their share on Facebook button so I can tell everyone how much I shared?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that kind of, I know it spreads the word about it, but there is a certain thing sometimes people will have of like, if I do a good deed and I can't tell everyone that I've done a good deed, what's the point of it?
Interesting, because it's like what you're talking about, that expectation of gratitude. Like, it's like we have this like culture, this obsessive like exchange, gift giving culture. Yeah. Not even gift giving. It's this exchange, this expectation.
Of like, I've done this thing, guys. I've done a thing, and they feel like they have to get people knowing about it.
Yeah, it's not enough.
I sound
to
like
just,
I'm a real grumpy old prick.
Well, no, I mean, but it's true, because that's like, I mean, I give money to someone last week who
you owed money to.
No, she's.
I can't, thanks for that, Evan. You owed them money.
She's a nurse whose husband has a brain tumor, and it's been operated on, and he's having these kind of fits and whatever, and they're just kind of financially kind of fucked.
Yeah.
And they're looking for, you know, a GoFundMe thing. So just so they could have a family holiday, because they've got small kids and they've never had a family holiday. So I gave like 50 quid to that. But I didn't share it. I shared the thing itself.
No, but you didn't share, like,
I gave money, whatever. But that, you know,
I think that's where stuff like social media does actually come into its own as a good, as a thing for good. It's like people like that, actual people in need, sometimes can benefit from that, from like the kindness of strangers.
But it's a sort of thing where people can't just be generous for the sake of it. They have to be generous.
Except you.
Except me.
Well, you never know. There might be a lot of quiet things, gestures going on that we don't know about because they're not.
There are, yeah.
And I guess,
You're talking about the people who want to be seen to be generous.
And maybe it's not that ethical, and maybe social media isn't being used ethically in that way. And it doesn't help a person's spirit, in my opinion, you know, because they say you should do those good deeds quietly, don't tell anyone, you know, that kind of way.
Because I don't like to talk about the charity work that I do.
Do a lot of charity work, don't like talking about it.
Even though I've just talked about it right there.
Who's that?
But yeah, I mean, I think with anything, it's like, It can be a great thing, and it can be a source for positive or a source for negative stuff. And definitely the internet is a... or social media in general is...
It's a minefield.
It's a minefield, but there's no middle ground. It's in some ways, I think it's opening up forums for discussion, but it's also closing down those forums and interaction. Well, and people are just living in their own little echo chambers, and they're not hearing anyone debating against what they're saying.
Shout each other down.
No middle ground.
Yeah, whereas in real life, if you're talking with someone about something, generally you can have a difference of opinion with someone and you'll still be talking to them afterwards. You won't block them. No. You know what I mean?
I don't agree with that. Let's move on to the next thing.
But I'm a great believer in just living and being in reality. I know social media is a different type of reality, but it's you know, the age of information we're in, you know, I really want to bring it back to the earthiness, you know, being with people, engaging with people, you know, and I'm lucky that I have the opportunity to do that today, you know, because, you know, we have certain privileges where we're at.
It's funny, I was thinking about, like, back when I was young, like in the 90s, going on the internet was like, not many people were on the internet, in Ireland especially. Like, we were on the internet really early in our house, like 94 or something. But, like, that was a way you could almost get away from things, like go on the internet and it's all these, like, weirdos and stuff. And now everyone's on the internet, and it's like, to get away from stress, you just go out for a walk and leave your phone behind. Yeah, like, it's a weird kind of, things have, like, flipped around. It's like putting your phone away. And just, that's almost de-stressing. It's like, I'll put my phone over there, put it on the shelf and don't look at it for a while. And
To some people who might want to do that, there is this other weird thing of, if I'm not on Facebook, if I'm not on Twitter, if I'm not sharing clickbait articles from the Daily Age and Loving Dublin and these such fucking websites, then I don't exist. It's like, there's this big party happening and I'm like wandering the estate by myself playing with a dog on the lawn.
That's really somber. Oh, man.
People feel that. Like, you know, this all-inclusive
fear of
everyone talking, everyone sharing things, everyone knows everything. And then if you step outside that, it's like you don't exist or something.
Yeah, it's also critical. It's like, if you are on, like, we have this forum to be public with each other online, and then it's like you see this odd post suggesting, you know, the people who are really doing stuff aren't taking time to post it up because they off doing it. You know, so that makes you feel this sort of guilt, like, am I shallow? I'm engaged in this world. So I think there's a balance that you can acquire with engaging with these worlds, you know?
Never say something online that you wouldn't say to someone's face. And it's very easy to disconnect from someone. You're not looking them in the eyes saying, I think you're a fucking cunt.
And
Thanks,
Edward.
No, but, you know, if you wouldn't say it to them in the real world, then you shouldn't say it online, because you're just being a coward.
There's also the danger of someone, if you think that you're joking with someone,
and they don't,
and you say, like, well, you would say that, you're an idiot. And if you were saying to them in real life, the tone and the way you're acting, they'd realise that they don't mean that's a joke. But on the internet, the tone is totally lost.
I've had people, I've been messaging people and they've sent me like emoji faces. I can get a smiley face or a sad face or a wink. But beyond that, I'm like, some of them are just so confusing. I'm like, sometimes I've actually looked up the emoji. What does this emoji mean?
A guide for parents.
Because that's like a new language now. I don't know. They're making an emoji movie.
Oh, good.
Patrick Stewart is playing the poop emoji. It's gone out of control. Sorry. It has, though.
They are making an emoji movie. I forgot about that.
Mm.
What's that going to be about?
Fuck knows.
Like emojis.
Emojis.
I still prefer to call them emoticons.
Oh, yeah, that's what they used to be called,
A transformer who's got in touch with his feelings.
Emoticon! Cry!
Do you want to
do a little leaf?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, do you want to hear a little leaf?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Little Leaf by Elaine Harrington, age 9. I'm just a little leaf. I'm all worn and torn. I've been used on many pages. I've been copied and drawn. I've been living on the ground for very, very long, sitting here for ages and being crushed under pages. And at the end of the day, I'm all crumbled away.
Wait.
Wow. Yeah, so very interesting the way some of the young women, as I said, I was out in Ballymun and using this on this miscellaneous syllabus, and they look at this piece of work, they hear it and they have it on the page as well, and I'm asking them to decipher it, you know, me, age 9. I want to go, oh yeah, I get it. You're using symbolism as a tool to convey how you felt as a child because you couldn't express yourself. You know, brilliant. I was just like, jaw hit the deck. What? No way. Fantastic. Just brilliant, you know. And then they noticed a recurring theme in my work when I done I called it Nature's Sequel, when I done this other piece 20 years later, and they're looking at this and comparing them. She's saying, well, there's repetition of, well, the content you're using in nature.
Yeah, yeah.
To explore feelings and convey emotions and so on.
So they're smarter than they get credit for, young people.
Well, it beats ZZZ123.
I don't know. I think ZZZ123 has a certain ring to it.
It does. I mean, I still remember it, but it's not as it's not as insightful as
no, it isn't.
As that poem.
But it's funny because the young people do ask me these days. I have to ask them. Do you know what I'm referring to when I say I'm just a little leaf, all worn and torn? Sitting here for ages being crushed under pages. I have to actually ask them, do you still do nature study?
Yeah,
do you still put the leaf under the page and rub it with the crayon?
It?
Yeah, they do. Okay. Some of them I don't think, maybe blank, but generally, I think it's a universal kind of
my
thing.
My nephews and niece came back from school with those one day and I was like, oh yeah.
Yep, that's the old standards. The leaves are still there.
It's still good crack doing that. The computers haven't totally ruined the crack of those leaves.
Scanning leaves in with a leaf app.
Yeah, like nowadays kids
are
just...
I bet you there's an app where you can for that.
Now, children, we're going to use the 3D printer and print some leaves.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get our computer pages.
Computer pages.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Wow, that's a Bowron.
Do you want me to do something or will Little Leaf suffice?
No, go for it.
We've never had a performance on the show before.
So this is the Bowron, and a fella called Barney gave this to me, and my father gave it to me through Barney, and it was hanging on as well probably for 60 years or something. So it's all, vegan that plays the Bowron, by the by. I'm not an abolitionist anymore anyway, so... I'm more tolerant. This was a gift and I wouldn't turn it down for the, you know, it has great spirit in it.
Yeah.
But there's a few of my vegan friends who won't come to my shows for the start because I always open with acoustic with a Bowron accompaniment.
Really?
So they'll wait until I'm plugging in. Isn't that so... That's abolitionist.
That is hardcore.
That is, yeah.
But
that's,
I mean,
extremist.
The skin on that would be from, I mean... as you said, like, that's a very old Bowron.
Yeah.
So. That animal would be long dead now anyway.
Yeah.
Just for natural costs.
There are vegans who would suggest I should bury this. I should give it a burial.
Yeah, no.
And, you know, but I mean, I think it's a shame because I'm going to end up, so I should go and buy another synthetic Bowron and purchase more, and it feeds into another type of consumer culture.
It gives the animal a life beyond its life, though. I mean, I think I'd love to be made into a Bowron. If I die, get my skin, stretch it out, make him do a Bowron.
I tell you what, I promise right now, I will make you into a Bowron.
And then you'd be like the having the crack at parties for the rest of your life.
So Bowron, one translation of Bowron, apparently is miscellaneous. Called myself miscellaneous when I was 19. So years and years later, when I started playing the Bowron, I just got this urge to play the Bowron for some reason. And I only ever learned two rhythms, a jig and a reel. And I just totally freestyle. I'm a complete autodidact like my father, you know. He didn't even teach me that's how much of a stringent rule of thumb he uses with autodidacticism. So I taught myself. And he, from him standing back, he gave me the room to teach myself. So it's really pertinent that he gave me this Bowron. And I taught myself to, you know, to play this rhythm that just accompanies the lyric. The lyric is often rhythmic enough. But anyway. So, one translation is miscellaneous. And apparently because the workers used to carry all their items around in the Bowron, the miscellaneous items, their tools and so on, and they used to winnow the corn with it as well. So, if that isn't miscellaneous, I don't know what it is. Miscellaneous, anything and everything, nothing in particular. Warriors, honorary weapons divide, unification of arms, Ashwood crosses revive. Essence of air, the native catcher in the heather, saluting born heroes when we bury the leather. Aspects of heritage, Greek past and present day. Tactics by leverage, cause coastal margins to fray. Obey nomadic gorges, kept within four grain fields. Rue the day of emigration, abandoning hurdles and shields. Pick up immature habits, Celtic tiger encroaching, igniting myth fires, friction born for dousing. Sanction mediocrity, oppress cultural identity. Imposed docility, dilute grail prowess, timidity. Elements combined, sweat, fair gloss, pauper, sons and daughters of air, and now the pure's not in the water. Brazen old schlitter, tougher than your eldest sister. Take you home again, Catelyn. Smash knuckles, palms a blister.
Woo!
Woo!
Great stuff.
We're breaking all ground on reviewables today.
That's it. No review of who?
No review of who. We don't need one.
We didn't need one.
Do you have anything you'd like to plug? Do you have a website?
I do, yeah. www.temperamentalmiscellaneous.com. So once you find it, you won't have to type it in again. So
the computers remember.
Oh, just they remember everything these days.
Or else just Google female rapper Dublin, you know. It's a small world.
Brilliant. Thanks very much for coming in.
No bother at all.
We'll talk to you next week, listeners.
And that
is
our show.
Yeah.
Thanks very much to Temperamental Miscellaneous for coming in and be the first musician to ever go be on our show. But not the last.
Oh no.
Because Eric Clapton is in town soon. And we're going to be asking him why he's such a mad racist.
Here's that song I wrote about cocaine.
No one will figure out this is about cocaine. I've called it cocaine.
I'll say it's a metaphor for something else.
Thanks very much to SoCal for the theme tune, to Ashley O'Reilly for the artwork, to Alan Bennett for the recording, and to you listeners for the listening.
For your ears.
Get us on Twitter at ReviewablesPod. Get us on Facebook.
Come and get us.
Come and get us, baby. Don't at me.
So check us out on www.etc. Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, Prickle Pear, Laydown.
Oh, Bullwhip.
Bullwhip.org.
Yeah.
And ContinentalQuilt.com. /Japan.
What's that new bullying app that teenagers use? We're on that too.
Okay.
Thanks for listening, guys. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
They're recording the podcast inside the building.
This has been a production of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.